Once more into the breach, dear friends.
Let's close the wall up with our English stead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And that's really my only serious use of my radio voice I get to do anymore.
Right.
I used to have a serious radio voice.
Radio serious? Different kind of serious.
Probably kind of serious. Well, you know.
Not a Greek serious.
It's kind of like the star serious. It's a very serious star.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. But at any rate, and then there's Regulus, too. You have to, that's another star that's very important out there. Okay. And then there's Vega, which are where all the Vegans come from.
Right. They don't eat meat.
Right. They don't eat meat around Vega, which is because it's a really big star and they all have sunburn.
Yes.
Anyway, that's all beside the point. The telephone number, if you'd like to call in here and inject a question or a thought into our ramblings, would be area code 254-773-1400.
Very nice.
Okay. We talked about consumer sentiment being up, durable goods orders jumped. The durable good orders will fall next week, next month. I can prophesy that because they jumped way too much this month.
Right.
And that was because there were some really big aircraft orders that hit
that
Boeing.
Have been waiting a long time to go through.
And
the Import-Export Bank is doing its job again.
Part of what we were discussing, and obviously comes up in the news about Donald Trump, one of the reasons that you're going to see somewhat reduced economic activity among businesses. So you won't see big durable goods orders because businesses are very reluctant to make major purchases right now or do major investment is because two of the three presidential candidates, specifically Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, have strongly advocated and stated unequivocally that they will impose economic policies in the United States that businesses consider to be devastating to them.
People have doubted me when I said that, so I'm going to give you an example. When Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders say that they want to impose sanctions against China, for they have differing reasons for the same thing, that means that they will increase the prices any part that is imported from China that's used in an iPhone or an Android or a car or a laptop or a television, or you just go down the list of everything that is made in China, goes up anywhere from 10% to 30%, depending on the whim of one of those people. That is going to have a major impact on business because they'll have to turn around and raise the prices of the finalized product. We're talking about Apple, an American company that's creating something in China, and the idea there that both Trump and Sanders are touting is that we need to bring the jobs home. The problem with tariffs is they don't bring the job home. They make inefficiencies everywhere.
And they reduce, historically, putting a tariff on imports reduces jobs at home.
Yes.
We tried that in the Depression, and we wound up with a 30% unemployment rate.
The Smoot-Hawley Act was something similar to both what Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump have proposed as far as tariffs. And that's not even touching Mexico. Most people don't know this, but we buy a lot more stuff from Mexico than we do from China. As a whole, the United States' number two trading partner is Mexico, and it waffles between number two and number one. So our number one trading partner, sometimes number two trading partner, sometimes number one, is Mexico. The other one is Canada. So when we say, well, what do I buy from Mexico? Well, next time you walk through the grocery store, everything.
Yeah.
Everything is from Mexico.
The wall that Donald Trump has said he wants to put up and make the Mexicans pay for, and by putting tariffs on their imports, would in essence raise the cost of food. Now, let's say he put a 35% tariff, which he's discussed, on the import of food from or through Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
because of the way economics works, that would probably raise the cost of vegetables by 50%.
Yeah, if you think for a second, in the middle of winter, if you walk down a grocery store aisles in the produce section and you see all those bananas and you see all those apples and all those avocados and all those tomatoes, those aren't in season. Those are anything but in season. We cannot grow them here unless we have massive greenhouses. Now, if we just keep making the atmosphere warmer, maybe we can grow them here. That would head off everything. We just make it really, really warm and we can grow it all here. We don't have to buy it from Mexico. But until that happens, we have a trading agreement with Mexico that keeps those things really inexpensive. And some of you out there remember when it was really hard to buy apples in winter. Or even in spring, that you couldn't get apples that weren't wrinkled up and looked like they'd been in somebody's basement because they'd been in somebody's basement. And it was a big basement usually, but that's the point here, is that with our produce, with our any product that you touch is unlikely to have 100% been made in the United States. Now, I fully endorse buying American. I do. But there are certain things that Americans don't make anymore. Like, I buy American. I have an Android phone that was made in China. I have an Android phone that was made in Korea. It's the same phone, but it was made in multiple places. And it's an American company that's running the software and a Korean company that made it in China. All of our economies are linked. It's kind of like if you buy something in California that was made in America, gasp, it may have been made in Texas. And if you really feel like buying locally, then you should go to a local farmer's market and forget about buying any electronics. Don't think about buying clothes.
Or cars.
We have a global economy. And when you put a barrier to that trade, whatever that trade is, whatever the barrier is, then you're making the market less efficient. And it's not capitalistic. It is the essence of socialism. And the fact that the Republican nominee is advocating for socialism isn't even in doubt anymore. It's just the way it is. We've got a caller on 773-1400. So, caller, you're on the air.
Thank you. I have a question. I live in Moody, Texas, and I have a question about all this back and forthing about auditing the Federal Reserve. Could you please comment on the pros and cons of what it would do should Congress get involved in actually screening the Federal Reserve activity?
Sure.
Yeah, it's really pretty simple. The Federal Reserve already is audited. It's just audited by a privately contracted auditor.
What? One of the big auditing firms. And, multiple and big auditing
they do,
firms.
They do submit a report.
To Congress, even.
To Congress. The issue is if Congress itself, the General Accounting Office, that is an agency of Congress itself, were to audit the Federal Reserve, it would fundamentally put control of the Federal Reserve in the hands of the House of Representatives. And they've just done such a wonderful job of balancing the budget and keeping their books completely straight. That
honoring their own promises.
Right. So that they want to take over. What this all kind of rolls out of a simple issue. During the financial crisis that went on, a lot of members of Congress were astonished to find out that the Federal Reserve has a lot of money.
It has a huge amount of money.
Most of them, I'll assure you, have never read the Federal Reserve Act, which was passed by Congress and has been amended many times. But in that Federal Reserve Act, it says the Federal Reserve, to use an analogy, is to act as a spleen. When there's too much money in the economy, it sucks it out and puts it on its books. And when there's not enough money in the economy, its job is to put money back into the economy.
It's called the lender of last resort.
And they made an astonishing discovery as this went on, as the Federal Reserve was buying bonds. The Federal Reserve now holds something approaching 20% of the national debt. In other words, they basically own the treasuries of about 20% of the money that Congress has borrowed and promised to pay back.
So it'd be kind of like you saying, I insist that I audit the bank that I owe money to.
Right. And so the point is, Congress has discovered, whoa, look at this. We could get rid of the national debt by making the Federal Reserve buy all the treasuries, and we could just spend as much money as we wanted to.
And this sounds like a very novel idea, except that it's been done
right.
in the United States before Andrew Jackson mm-hmm. did it.
And we wound up with runaway inflation, which is where we got the word Dixie, by the way. Absolute runaway inflation when Congress and the president, in essence, took over the Federal Reserve in the 1830s. What it boils down to is Congress, if they had their way, would spend unlimited amounts of money.
We know this about Congress. It's what they do. They're in control of the purse strings. The thing that's limiting them is that they don't have enough money to go crazy with it. And some
right.
of them are saying, well, we need to not borrow as much as, well, okay, it's okay to borrow this one, but no, maybe not. Okay, we'll borrow this, but not that. Oh, yeah, we'll borrow that too.
But if they have to pay it back, and they know they have to pay it back, and each year they have a chunk of the budget that has to go to pay interest on the national debt, and that restricts them and causes them not to want to borrow a lot of money and create a lot of money in the system. If they were to able to take control of the Federal Reserve, they could emulate Greece, or they could emulate Venezuela or
Portugal.
If historically, on a couple of occasions, actually twice, Congress has put itself in the position where it was the creator of money, which is what it wants to be, and could spend as much as it wanted to. Each congressman or woman could spend as much in their district and give out free money and build new houses and new roads.
Doesn't that sound amazing?
All kinds of things. But the problem is,
sounds like China.
If nobody is out there earning that money by actually producing things in the economy, pretty soon you get more money than stuff.
And that means that everybody gets paid more money, but the money suddenly becomes mm-hmm. worth a lot less than it was.
And we actually, it's an example, in Zimbabwe, the government took over the equivalent of the Federal Reserve and started printing money and creating money, and now it's only about like $12 billion, whatever.
You could have just stopped
with the dollar
in Zimbabwe. I think we got the idea there.
They did it in Venezuela. There's lots of places around the world where the local elected officials have taken over the central bank and audited it and said we don't like the way they're doing this. So what we want them to do is print more money.
Let me kind of give some background on what the purpose of the Federal Reserve. Why do we even have this thing? Why did Congress pass the act that caused this big secretive organization of gasp bankers to stand out there? Now, it's headed by people that are not bankers. They're appointed by the president. They're approved by the Senate. So Bernanke, right. Greenspan, Yellen, these are academics. These are people who have studied their whole lives about monetary policy, that are anti-politics, that think that politics just gets in the way of real work. And that's kind of like most of us, actually.
I don't know. Most of us spend a lot of time at work arguing about politics.
That's true. So the concept of the Federal Reserve happened because there were runs on the bank. Banks, just envision for a moment Jimmy Stewart and It's a Wonderful Life, the savings and loan that he was running, and it's not here, it's in Jim's house, it's in that
don't
concept.
Forget George's house.
George's
right.
house. That concept of a run on the bank. How do we know that a bank has our money? And the
right.
answer to that is we really don't, unless somebody is going to the bank and requiring them at the end of every day that they give out loans, because that's what banks do. If they're giving out loans, we don't want them to give out all the money, because if I owe my electric bill and the check bounces because the loans got paid out a lot more than they had deposits, we're in trouble. So the
right.
Federal Reserve has the job of saying you must keep money in reserve federally to the banks. So the banks then have to keep money, a percentage of the deposits
mm-hmm.
in reserve. They're not allowed to loan it out. They
right.
can mess up a little bit, and they say, oh, no, our loan officers weren't talking to each other. We loaned out too much money. We only have 19.5% in reserve instead of 20% in reserve. That's what the interbank lending window is. That's the numbers that people talk about, interest rates going up and down. They can go to other banks or to the Federal Reserve and say, I need a spot loan, an overnight loan, to get me up to my reserve requirement.
And the the end result is, again, the Federal Reserve's job, and it was tasked in because of the financial crisis in 1908, it came into existence, to smooth out the monetary flows in the United States to maintain the value of the currency. And they were given a second mandate in the 1980s to maintain full employment.
Right. That's a tough one.
But the point is, they have to be able to do, it's very much like the judiciary. It's really, really important to keep them out of the political arguments and to keep them independent so they can focus on professionally doing what they're doing and stay out of politics.
They're trying to make a decision that when they make the decision today, it may impact the economy today, but it's extremely unlikely. It's far more likely to start touching the economy in a couple of years and really start to reap a result maybe 5 to 10 years out.
Mm-hmm.
This is like turning the Titanic. It takes a while. And if the House of Representatives, which is reelected every 2 years, they're very politically motivated. They're constantly in election cycles. If they're in charge of making a decision for the well-being of the economy of the United States that may have an impact in 5 or 10 years, that's not going to get them reelected. They need to have an impact now. And if they make an impact now, then they're going to get this. Remember when I brought home the bacon?
It's. Let me give you an example. It's kind of like what you said, you lived in Moody?
Yes, sir.
Okay, it's kind of like all the citizens in Moody had a central bank, and there's a bank, and it used to be that way. And there's a bank in Moody, and everybody does business at that bank. If the citizens of Moody decided we want to own that bank,
which is quite doable,
and they decided that the bank would make loans based on what they wanted rather than on the credit quality of the people that they were borrowing the money.
Right. If you make a democratic, fair determination, by fair I mean everybody should get an equal treatment,
right,
of who gets a loan, then we have another Great Recession,
yeah,
or depression coming.
Pretty soon you're going to have a bankrupt bank and a bankrupt Moody. You can see that, right?
Yes.
Well, that's what would happen if Congress. It's one of those things to remember. Fundamental, I think Judge Learned Hand said, that the power to tax is the power to destroy.
And that was about the separation of church
and
state.
If I were to say to you, you're about to get a full audit by the IRS, what would that cause your heartbeat to do?
Oh, it goes tripling, Mary.
Okay, so the whole issue of being audited by a federal agency strikes fear into your heart, because the ability to audit by a federal agency is the ability to destroy and change behavior,
yeah,
right?
If the Federal Reserve is audited by Congress, and Congress has unending hearings where they are in their audit able to stop the Federal Reserve chairman from doing her job, instead to sit in front of Congress or in front of the Congressional Budget Office or some type of auditing agency for half of the time that she should be doing something else, then they have the ability, yeah, to then turn around and say, look how incompetent they are. They're not even doing their jobs. Yeah,
there's really just a fundamental principle here, and the fundamental principle is the Federal Reserve needs to remain independent of Congress. Now,
it's one of the checks and balances.
It's controlled, just like the IRS is supposed to remain and does a good job of remaining independent from congressional or presidential influence. Now, the
still has scandals, but that's why they're scandals. It's kind of the norm in every other country for them to discriminate against one political party or another.
The board that runs the IRS, that governs it, is nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate, just like the people who run the Federal Reserve are nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. But once you put them in there, it's really important that the Congress, and more specifically the House of Representatives, does not have control of them. And if I could use one prime example, the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, who you probably know who is, right?
Yes, McConnell.
Okay. Do you remember that in the right after Barack Obama was elected, do you remember what his primary goal for the Senate was for the next 4 years?
He said
it. I don't.
He actually said this. He announced that our primary goal of the United States Senate from the perspective of the Republican Party is to ensure that Barack Obama is a one-term president. Now, I'm not saying whether or not that was appropriate or anything else, but that is...
Politically, it was appropriate. So, but to get things done, you, not very appropriate
at
all.
Can you imagine putting an organization that has priorities like that in charge of the Federal Reserve? And I don't care whether it's a Democrat who says it or a Republican who says it.
And the same is true when we're talking about judges. You know, in Texas, we've split from the rest of the nation in some ways in that our Supreme Court and a lot of our major state judges are elected. And that gives us the ability to remove a judge that's being biased, that's being unfair, without impeachment. But it also makes the judges...
very politically motivated.
Right. They alter their opinion. And the fact that a judge has to go out and ask attorneys to donate money for their election campaign is a conflict of interest. It's a big one. And a lot of times, Texas judges have to recuse themselves when an attorney comes in and has a case, and they're the biggest donator or whatever for the foundation or the PAC or whatever that funded the judge's election.
And so that's kind of a long answer to a short question. But the bottom line to it is...
my concern was the a number of emails that seemed to be concerned. Coming from certain places that I don't know what they're sponsored from, they keep asking me to sign up to promote this, and I've been waiting to get on the phone with you all because I had some serious questions about giving Congress any more power than they already have.
Yeah,
there's a lot of lobbying.
Something that needs to be independent.
There's a lot of lobbying organizations who have a lot of say in Congress who would very much like to get to the rather substantial number of hundreds of billions of dollars that the Federal Reserve has in reserve against emergencies. I mean, again, if you look at the fact that the members of Congress who complain about the deficit and the national debt are the people who voted it into existence.
That's kind of their job.
And
exactly.
And the fact that they could... that they did that, even while complaining about it and telling you they're against it. Okay, there's checks and balances in our government, and I'll be very frank, just like Andrew Jackson said and a lot of other people said, there's nothing in the Constitution about a central bank. Therefore, it should be done away with. Well, there's lots of things that we do that the Constitution does not forbid, but Congress passed a law, and the president signed a law, and we've amended it again and again and again. You know, there is nothing in the Constitution that says there should be a Securities and Exchange Commission.
And there's nothing in the Constitution that says that the Treasury Department is the one that authorizes bonds being issued. In fact, the Constitution pretty clearly says that Congress has to authorize it. But Congress passed an act that said, we're just going to authorize the spending and the Treasury Department has to come up with the debt to pay for it.
Yes, and that way we can blame the Treasury for all the money that's been spent that we owe, that we have to pay back.
Appreciate y'all reassuring me. I've been hesitating to respond, and then I thought at least I ought to ask a question from some people that have more in-depth awareness.
Well, you let us know when you talk to them, because we're interested to.
Very frankly, one of the bigger threats to our nation at any given moment is Congress and the president agreeing to take control of the Federal Reserve. Because
of almost anything, actually. Very agreeing to take control of anything.
Well, now, I want to say very frankly, this did happen. It happened under Andrew Jackson. And it is one of the primary causative factors of the United States Civil War.
Yeah.
And
because it influenced the impact of that led to inflation, which led to the specie circular, which made the South bankrupt.
Yeah,
only portable form of wealth in the South at that point, because the currency of the South was completely inflated. The currency of the North had gold behind it because they sold to Europe. And that left the South bankrupt, and they had slaves. That was the only portable wealth that they
without
had.
Without exception in history, and it certainly happened in U.S. history.
Thank you for your comments. I appreciate it.
Thanks for
all
the call.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Without exception, you were saying.
Well, without exception, what we've seen is when the legislature of a nation takes over the central bank, it's followed very shortly by runaway inflation. The inflation is then followed by a massive depression. And the end of that depression is marked by a major war.
It's pretty common.
And we really would rather, I personally think that's probably a lesson from history that we should learn and not try, you know, it's one of those things.
That's so outdated, though, to think we should learn from history. Psh, what are you thinking? I mean, let's make the same mistakes our parents and their parents did, because why not?
Yeah, it makes as much sense. Auditing the Federal Reserve makes as much sense as going on the gold standard.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are for going on the gold standard. But
it sounds really great.
Let me explain that the gold was nearly $2,000 an ounce about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
6 years ago or something. It's $1,200 now. Now,
that's deflation if our money is backed by it. It's deflation or it's inflation in a different sense. It's inflation. Money would buy a lot less.
In other words, if you had the equivalent of $2,000, if we were on the gold standard a few years ago, it would only buy what $1,200 would buy the same thing today. We would have massive deflation. We would have had a depression. And the big thing about going on the gold standard, the world price of gold is largely in the hands of two countries. Now, there's other factors in there.
Say it's in the hands of more countries than but not for production.
Russia and South Africa have the supply. The Chinese and the Indians create the demand. And so those four countries control, if they wanted to.
We could, too.
Control the price of gold.
And, the United States government has $14 trillion in the U.S. Federal Reserve, Bank of New York.
But this is my point. Do we really want to have a currency where the value is controlled largely by the Russians?
No.
That was what would happen if we went on the gold standard.
Or the South Africans, for that matter. Or, I mean, the fact that we have a huge amount of gold at the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, people don't talk about that when they talk about the national debt, by the way. They don't look at the assets held by the government that are marketable assets. It's important to recognize. But that concept is, if we turned around for whatever reason and decided to sell some of that gold, when you're talking about $14 trillion, would disrupt the gold market globally, completely
mm-hmm.
disrupt it,
right.
Because there's so much of it being held in reserve. The British have a huge amount of gold. The Chinese have a huge – there's a lot of places that have huge amounts of gold that are just sitting in vaults, that if we went to the gold standard, all it would take is one country deciding that they wanted gold for the dollar, and it would disrupt us. This is why we went off the gold standard.
Right. The French – we were on the gold standard in 1971. The French came to us and said, we've accumulated all these dollars, by the way, mostly through – contractors and so on in Vietnam. They'd accumulated a huge quantity of dollars, and the French, who were still
gold-backed dollars,
de Gaulle, who was still very angry about what had happened during World War II, and
we didn't tell him about D-Day.
We didn't tell him the secrets because his organization was full of Nazi spies. Presented to President Richard Nixon several billion dollars and says, "Give me gold, because you're on the gold standard. We're presenting you with all these dollars. Send us the gold in exchange for the dollars." And President Nixon exercised a law that Congress hadn't really thought too much about when they passed, I don't think. But basically said, nope, we're off the gold standard.
And here you go. Have some dollars for your dollars.
And we'll
here
be
you
glad,
go.
You know,
glad Mr. De Gaulle.
Strictly paper for paper. And
here you go. We'll give you new paper for your old paper.
And
thank you very much. Nice transaction.
Once again, there is an issue in that both China and Russia have very, very large quantities of U.S. currency, some of which was actually printed in the United States.
Yeah, and there's a lot of it that wasn't. There's a lot of it that's really hard to tell, but it's counterfeit.
They use it as their reserves, and individuals use it as their reserves. And if we went on the gold standard and they presented all those dollars to us and said, by the way, the amount of dollars they physically have probably approaches the quantity of gold we have between the Federal Reserve and Fort Knox together. If they presented us with all those dollars and we were on the gold standard, we'd have to pay them in gold.
Yeah, and this,
and then we wouldn't have any, and then the dollar would be worthless.
Right. So this is another piece. A lot of pundits are worried that the Japanese or the Chinese are going to dump all of our treasuries on the market. They're not going to do that because their currencies, in many cases, are backed by the U.S. dollar. The Chinese currency is backed by the dollar. They've got it linked to the dollar. They are keeping it tied to the dollar. They don't want to dump all of our currency because it would cause their currency to dump, too. And if it were gold-backed, they wouldn't have that reservation.
We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, you were talking about Donald Trump and
and Bernie Sanders, yes.
Yeah, but this Trump thing. I remember when Barack Obama got elected. He was going to pull everybody out of Iraq and Afghanistan, you know.
And he did. He did.
He just puts them back.
He left some people in Afghanistan, but he's
there's very few. Right.
Yeah. But anyway, he went ahead and he's bullheaded. Did what he wanted to do with Iraq. So now we have ICE. Don't you think Donald Trump will have a come to Jesus meeting with people and he would listen and see the better?
Wait a minute.
No, Donald Trump listening is not that.
Right. He is an intelligent man, but he has a lot of hubris. He has a lot of arrogance. It's really hard. I mean, when asked, and this is one of the big things that gets asked to every presidential candidate from the history of presidential candidates, who is your team of advisors? And his answer to that has been inconsistent, but mostly himself.
And this
is one of the things. Yeah. Let me finish that. Well, this is one of the things that I've seen as a major problem with our current president, Barack Obama. There are people that are very proud of the fact that when he sits down with a bunch of advisors, he's the smartest man in the room. That makes me upset because there are smarter people in the United States. And if he's the smartest man in the room, it's because he likes being the smartest man in the room. It's not because he wants to work with the smartest people available to get things done.
I think one of the better presidents we've had recently is certainly Ronald Reagan. Now, that's just my opinion. Ronald Reagan did not consider himself to be a particularly intelligent person. But if you go back and read what he said he was going to do as president and what he did, they're almost identical. Particularly when on policy decisions. Now, he said he's going to shrink the government. He actually enlarged the government. But he did say what he was going to do with Russia. He said what he was going to do, particularly in foreign policy.
With the tax code, and with a lot of things. And he stuck to his guns.
And when we determine who's going to be president, I know there's a lot of emotion involved. But I think it's wise to set aside the emotion and look and see what this person has said this person will do as president. And take them at their word and choose the one who advocates consistently the best policy.
It's called brinksmanship to say that they've been promising to do something, but don't you think they're going to have a come-to-Jesus moment when they realize that that's probably not a good idea? That may never happen. It's what caused World War I. It's what caused the change of the Roman Republic to an empire. Brinksmanship, the idea that nobody will make that stupid decision, they'll realize they're being stupid before they do it.
I'm going to be very frank with you in my opinion as the old guy here. The guy who is a Republican, who is still a Reagan Republican, and that is to say that any presidential candidate who promises repeatedly to act in violation of the Constitution, in blatant violation of the Constitution on their first day in office, probably should not get elected. And both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump has promised on their first day of office they will do certain things that, if you'll actually check the Constitution, would require them to overthrow the Constitution of the United States to do.
Now, this does not make me happy. This,
you know, Hillary has essentially done the same thing.
Who has?
Hillary.
No, actually, she's never in her in what she's promised to do to be president. I'm not saying I like her.
Yeah, this is what I was about to say.
She has never stated she would do something that was blatantly illegal and a violation of the Constitution on her first day of office. Now, she's never said that.
Now, this is something that you need to hold clearly. This is very disappointing to us both that she is – all she really has to do is keep her mouth shut, and she will likely be the next president because she's not being inflammatory. And the fact that we completely dislike her is beside the point. She's not saying she's going to destroy things. She's really not saying a whole lot. She said some things that are things that in a normal presidential election season, I would say, no, I don't want to do that. But when compared to a 30% tariff on China or free college and houses for everyone, I'm going, where is the reasonability in our politics at the moment? And then maybe that's an oxymoron, too.
The last president who ran for office and was elected, who promised to do certain things if elected that were in violation of the Constitution, did them.
And then got removed from office?
No. Andrew Jackson.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Nixon.
When the Supreme Court ruled that his actions were unconstitutional, he said, how many regiments does John Marshall, the Chief Justice, have?
Yeah.
And proceeded to just ignore the Constitution.
And he's done it. He did
and
it quite a few times.
As I said earlier, his actions, if you actually study a little bit of history, you'll find out the actions of Andrew Jackson led directly to a huge depression followed by the Civil War.
In the 1920s, in the history textbooks, when they refer to the Great Depression, and they did. You can pull up these textbooks, and they refer to the Great Depression, and you say, well, wait a minute, that's before the Great Depression happened. They're referring to 1837.
Okay. Anyway, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I love listening to you guys.
All right.
Scared to death, but I love listening to you.
You're scared of us? We're scared of us, too,
well,
so that's all right.
Let me give you some good news on top of it.
Okay.
If Donald Trump is elected or Bernie Sanders is elected, the reality is that the vast majority of what they claim they're going to do is not going to happen. It cannot happen because they don't have the authority to do it as president. And I sincerely doubt that Mexico is going to pay for a wall, or that the Congress of the United States is going to pay for a wall and send a bill to Mexico. I sincerely doubt that Congress is going to pass a Free College for Everyone Act. Those statements...
Well, maybe it's a good thing that we'll have a president that our House and Senate do not like, whether it's the Republican or Democrat. Therefore,
yeah, I tend to agree with that.
I just like presidents that have some degree of reality in what they're talking about.
Right.
And I kind of support the least worst at this point, which I don't like, but that's life.
And when it comes to the rest of the world, that's where things get a little bit scary, in that the president has a lot more power in foreign policy than they do in domestic policy.
Yeah.
Most of the domestic policy issues that have been promises are not possible, but the foreign policy stuff is very possible, and that's scary.
And very frankly, Donald Trump is one of the scarier presidential candidates in history. He, for example, has not gone back on the fact that he accepts support from white supremacists.
Or that he wants to kill the family of terrorists.
If somebody's accused of terrorism, then kill their family.
That's just totally not right.
He's from the hill.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. Thank you for calling, and I hope you have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
And you're listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and you're listening to KTEM, which is a Town Square Media station, and it has to stay on the air, which means that they have to get money from people who pay for commercials. So we're going to play some commercials, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and Jake McClure. And the telephone number in here continues to be 254-773-1400. And we've proved beyond a reasonable doubt today that we have at least two listeners.
I'm not sure that we've proven that. I believe that at any given time, we may have less than that. And occasionally,
someone
listens long enough to make a phone call.
Two people were listening. Anyway, there's a couple of other odds and ends poking around and rolling around out there. This is kind of a moot point. It's not all that big of a thing at this point. But this week, the IMF and the Germans,
I was going to mention that as well,
agreed that that they're not going to make Greece default.
Yeah, they're going to give them more loans to pay for the loans that they gave them before.
That they can't afford to pay back.
Right. We're going to loan you money to pay us our money for the loans that we paid you to pay us for the money for the loans that you paid.
But the IMF imposed on the – it's actually technically on the Eurozone, but the Germans were the ones that they were negotiating with. They said, hey, guys, we're going to have to put – you're going to put a cap on the interest rates you're charging the Greeks. And, yeah, we're going to ask them to sign a bunch of documents saying they're going to really do some severe austerity measures.
There's
but
a new
we're
tax.
Not going to new hold tax. Them. We're not going to hold them to doing that. This is the big thing. The Germans can't seem to figure out, which, by the way, probably there's people in the United States who agree with them on this. They can't figure out that if you restrict the business activity of a country, you insist that they spend less money in the country, that they be really, really austere, that their GDP will decline. And by the way, this is a fascinating thing about the German debt. It was written down by about a third.
Mm-hmm.
But the percentage of debt to GDP has risen.
Because the GDP has fallen faster than
right.
the debt.
And if the Germans were to say, okay, Greece, we're going to treat you like a bankruptcy case. We're going to wipe the books clean. Now, we're not going to loan you any more money, but we're just going to basically wipe the books clean. You don't owe anybody any money anymore, which is what a person would encounter in bankruptcy. The Greek economy might just recover nicely. As long as the debt is the focus and the Germans insist that the debt be paid back and we're not going to cut any deals and we're going to make you pay for all the money that you borrowed, that doesn't work very well. And by the way, another thing occurred, and this actually occurred a week ago.
You were talking about Puerto Rico?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm reading your mind.
All right. Well,
go ahead.
You want to? Okay. Congress, in a sneaky bipartisan late hour thing where the Republicans and the Democrats agreed on something.
You don't get bipartisan agreements right now without it being sneaky.
They have to.
They can't let anybody know that it's happening, or both sides will say, you're traitors. You can't talk to those people.
They're Americans. Huh? Voted for a bill that President Obama asked for and he signed, which if you were to challenge the members of the House.
We didn't do that. Never did it. Didn't happen.
The Freedom Caucus, called now. They would deny it vigorously. But they, in fact, did vote for it through a complicated parliamentary procedure where they could vote against it and then vote for it.
Right.
So they can say they voted against it. But basically it said, we're going to set up a bankruptcy condition.
For Puerto Rico.
For Puerto Rico so that they won't have to lay off all of their public workers.
Now, I was going to precede both the speaking about Greece and Puerto Rico by saying something very clearly. We've been calling wolf for years.
Wolf.
We've been calling wolf for, almost 10 years now.
We have?
Yes. Now, the fact that the wolf actually exists doesn't help us a lot.
What wolf have we been calling, and what was his telephone number?
We have been calling wolf about Greece and about Puerto Rico and about Portugal and about Ireland and about Iceland and about, you just go down all these names, Venezuela and so on. The fact is that the wolf existed.
It still exists. And it's having a grand time in Venezuela.
And what we talk about when we're talking about Greece is a tiny, tiny percentage of the GDP of the European Union. It's down at the one below the 1% of the GDP of the European Union, and that says something about they're not that important. However, Puerto Rico, as a percentage of the U.S. GDP, is a very, very tiny percent. If a default of a major government, even if it's only a tiny percent of the GDP of these institutions, is allowed to collapse, that doesn't just stay in one spot. It spreads. As the Europeans have discovered, there are a lot of Greeks living elsewhere right now. The business people of Greece have left, and that's part of the problem with Greece's GDP, is that all the austerity and the raising of taxes causes people to say, hey, I've got nothing preventing me from starting the same business across the border. I can go to Italy, I can go to France, I can go to Germany, and start a business. And when we were talking about Puerto Rico, one of the major issues there is that the intelligentsia, if you will, the doctors, the lawyers, the engineers, the accountants, the electrical engineers, basically any type of job that has requirement in it somewhere of a lot of knowledge, they've been leaving. There's been an outflow of those people from Puerto Rico because the taxes have had to go up to pay for the debts. And the idea that they can just raise taxes again, well, all the people that can pay those taxes are leaving. There's no stop between going from Puerto Rico to the United States. They're U.S. citizens. They can come to Texas and do exactly what they were doing there. They don't even, I mean, if they're an attorney, they have to pass a bar of the state that they're living in, and that's it.
But Puerto Rico is going down. Puerto Rico, whether we like it or not, is called a Commonwealth of the United States.
Right. We do like it.
And if Congress did nothing, then basically their highways would start to deteriorate, their electricity would go off, and it would create a horrible disaster and a refugee flow out of Puerto Rico into the United States that would make anything we've seen in the past look like a nothing.
Yeah.
And
there's nothing to stop them from doing it because they're all U.S. citizens.
And it would hurt the credibility of the United States in the international financial markets tremendously because there is an assumption out there that since Puerto Rico is part of the United States, a Commonwealth of the United States,
right,
that means we will not put the world in a position of having an uncontrolled collapse of their economy and stand by and do nothing. It's like
their debts will be paid.
It's sort of like if we have a house that we're leasing next door to ours, and it starts to burn down, and say that's really not our house. We're not going to worry about it. We'll just let it burn. That really would be frowned upon because the fire could spread. The other, and in the case of Greece, it's similar. Greece leaving the European Union would set a terrible precedent, just as
Puerto Rico leaving the United States. I mean, they could do it. There's all it takes is a popular vote.
But the issue is there was an assumption by a lot of people when they loaned money to Greece that the European Union would back it because they were dealing in euros. And they don't. They're not going to back it.
It's part of the reason why they had the credit rating that they did is because there were euros being given as the loan, and so they figured payment back in euros. Well, the eurozone is going to back this.
In this particular instance, the issue was mainly Germans and German banks loaned a lot of money to Greece without really thinking about whether they could pay it back. Now, does that sound familiar? It was a crisis that went on all over the world. And then they sold the bonds off to other people. It really boils down to Jeff McClure's humble opinion.
Or not so humble opinion.
Just like in the United States, and this is a crucial thing. I'm going to hit this in the last few minutes. In the United States, we allowed the banks, many banks, to take a big hit. Shareholders lost all of their money in many cases, such as with AIG and other places. And the banks themselves ceased to exist in some cases because they had made really, really, really bad loans. Merrill Lynch no longer exists as a company. It is now just a brand owned by Bank America.
Right.
And so if they don't deal with it that way, it's going to be an albatross around their neck. The difference between what's going on in the United States and going on in the rest of the world is we dealt with our debts. We bit the bullet.
Yeah.
And we backed a lot of those debts through the Federal Reserve, through the federal government. We passed some bills.
We also let companies fail.
Right.
And Merrill Lynch failed and was purchased by another company.
But
there's a series of that.
But we stepped in the case of General Motors and backed the debt of General Motors. Now it's turned around and worked very well. But we've dealt with them one way or the other. And that's a hard thing to do. But we did it. In Japan and in Europe, they haven't.
They don't want to bite the bullet. They don't want to see the bloodshed of having companies fail. And having a structured failure of a large company that isn't doing something is a lot better than keeping it around as a zombie staggering around, destroying everything that it touches.
And I'm going to get into that at some point, but that's what is wrong with the Japanese economy and with the European economy right now. So you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we actually have, as we said, a conflict of interest because we have an office where we offer investment advice and manage investment portfolios in Salado. And if you're interested in discussing any of these things with us or commenting on the program or anything else, you're certainly welcome to give us a call. We have voicemail during the weekend, but during the week we have live people answering the phone. Don't even get a telephone tree. And then you can call us at 254-947-1111. That's 254-947-1111. Or
you can reach that toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. There you can read our philosophy, our newsletters. You can listen to podcasts in case you weren't insane enough from one episode. You could go for more insanity. You can also email us through the website or directly, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. I highly recommend seeing a professional for psychiatric services if you want to listen to our program any further. Until next week, this has been The Personal
Your
Wealth
Fox Coach. News station in Central Texas, News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.